You're listening to KCAW Sitka Raven Radio, and thanks for joining us as Southeast celebrates Newsday, a day where we celebrate all the services that KCAW provides outside of our normal music programming. For the last of our special programming today, news director and host Robert Woolsey is joined by a panel of locals who are in the know about all things fish. Join Heather Bauscher, Linda Bankman, and Harvey Kitka for the next hour as we discuss the future of fishing in the Southeast.
And good afternoon. The time is 3 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're listening to Raven Radio KCAW in Sitka. And today is Southeast Celebrates News Day. And this hour is devoted to the future of fishing. I'm Robert Woolsey, and joining me in the studio today are three special guests. I've got Heather Bauscher, who is chair of the Sitka Fish and Game Advisory Committee. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Rob.
And Linda Bankman is here. Linda is the executive director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association. Hi, Linda.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And also Harvey Kitka is here as well. Harvey is a member of the Subsistence Regional Advisory Committee, the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Committee, and the Sitka Tribe of Alaska's Herring Resource Committee. And it's nice to have you here in the studio with us, Harvey.
Thank you.
And we're going to be talking about the future of fishing over the course of this hour. And it's pretty much an open forum for us. I think I have talked to the three of you in different capacities over the years doing news. But the most recent thing on our plate in the KCAW News Department is yesterday's Supreme Court hearing. It was oral arguments in the case of Sitka Tribe versus State of Alaska on its appeal of herring management in Sitka Sound. And so herring is the issue that is just with us. And also the Alaska Department of Fish and Game this week announced that the projected biomass in Sitka Sound next year is 150,000 tons, fourth largest in recent memory. And we're already starting to think about herring, even though some of the worst winter weather of the year is headed our way. And who wants to start? Who wants to talk a little bit about herring? Harvey, I know that you were in front of the Board of Fish quite a bit this past cycle talking about herring. How did it go?
I believe that we finally got some ears that listened to what we had to say. A herring are probably a major part of the food chain that not only salmon and halibut feed on, but most all the creatures in the ocean and some in the air, besides people and other animals that live off the beach. And in the springtime, the bears will come down and feed on them, as well as everything else, all the birds. Sitka Sound used to be, how would you say it? It's kind of like a beehive of herring. It was kind of a main place. When it got too big for the sound, it starts spreading out, as it's starting to do again, finally. But for a lot of years, we had a lot of herring, but during part of the early stages of the 1930s and early 40s, almost up to 1950, the herring reduction plant came in. It took a lot to get them out of Sitka Sound. The halibut fishermen, the trollers, they petitioned the U.S. federal government, the Fish and Wildlife Service, to have them stop, because it got too hard for the halibut fishermen who fished out of skiffs, basically. They were towed out by bigger boats that towed a whole bunch of skiffs out, and they fished the halibut out of the skiffs. when the halibut disappeared out of Sitka Sound, and one of the reasons they found was that if there was no food in Sitka Sound, these halibut weren't going to come in. The king salmon are basically the same. They wouldn't come in. So when it got that bad, they petitioned the U.S. Fish and Wildlife to stop the reduction plant in Sitka Sound. So they did that, and it was basically in the early stage of a recovery when they started commercial fishing. They fished for a bait fishery for a lot of years, but it wasn't really in Sitka Sound. They fished it basically down in Whale Bay and crawfish, and down in that area they fished for the bait fishery.
And this would have been after World War II, after statehood in 1959?
Right.
Before the commercial sacro fishery.
Actually, before 1959.
Right.
In the early 50s. I know the fleet basically was... the bait fishermen were basically local fishermen. Merlin Lowe and... Can't think of his name right now. But there was about three major boats that fished for the bait for them.
Yeah, so herring has been key to everything for over 100 years in Sitka Sound. In our existing human memory, our fathers, grandfathers, going back to the reduction plants. I wonder, you know, given what the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is telling us about the upcoming season, the large biomass, somebody coming down from outer space, what would you tell them about why we're still having conflict over this resource?
We're having, basically, it's for a lot of reasons we're having conflict, because for whatever reason, herring survived whatever happened in the ocean, whatever killed off a lot of the other forage fish that everything fed on, as well as herring. Herring being basically what was left. We lost some of the sand. I can't think of the name of that one.
Sand lance.
And the needlefish. We lost those ones too. To the forage fish, for probably 8 or 9 years, it was basically we couldn't even find any in the salmon we were catching, and herring was the only thing that was out there. At that time, we started seeing the king salmon being full of codfish, which was I hadn't saw before. We opened them up and they'd be. There'd be codfish about 8 inches long in some of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really, really sad. And I think that, because I think one of the first satellites that took pictures of the Earth at one time took a picture of Baranoff Island. And it just happened to be a time when the herring were spawning. And it was really shocking to look at that picture and see that around the whole island was white with herring spawn. And now it's just Sitka Sound, basically. What shows up down and below Dorothy Narrows is just a layer of eggs. There's nothing more to it. There wasn't enough age class for them to fish it.
Mm-hmm.
They still count it as part of the biomass, which I don't agree with. Salisbury Sound the same way, basically. These herring that come in from the ocean, some of them come in from around Sitka Point and come in through into Sitka Sound that way. Some of them come in through Salisbury Sound and spawn on the north end of Neva Strait. But they're basically the same ocean stock.
Yeah. I'm speaking with Harvey Kitka. He is a member of the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Committee and on the Tribal Herring Resource Committee. He's here with Linda Benkin and Heather Bauscher. We're talking about the future of fishing. We're sort of getting off, starting off talking about the past of fishing, but I think it really does inform the future, what's going on with herring. When we come back, I wanted to talk to you and Linda and you, Heather, especially about why we have trouble getting the Board of Fish to sort of recognize the importance of historical perspective when it's making management decisions, because I know at the last board cycle there was a lot of testimony, like what Harvey's telling us now, about how herring spawn used to be distributed around Baranof Island, and it just doesn't seem to land at the policy-making level. But when we do come back, we'll talk about that. Right now, we're going to Fred and Ann, who are going to tell us more about why we're here today.
Thanks, Rob. Today is Southeast Celebrates News Day. I'm Ann Alquist, and I'm here to remind you that it takes a community to power community radio, KCAW Raven Radio. We have a goal of $30,000 to raise today. Every penny, every dollar will go to support local news and public affairs at KCAW. We're at $10,700, and we've got a match on the table. KCAW.org to donate or call 747-5877. I'm in the studio with Fred, and he can give you some details about how far your contribution will go.
Yeah, big thank you to Sea Alaska Corporation. Generously donated a challenge of $2,500. So your contributions will be matched. And when you contribute, you'll be entered into a drawing to win a pair of Alaska Seaplanes tickets to any Alaska Seaplanes destination. And all current sustaining members will be automatically entered into the drawing. So feel free to upgrade or make special one-time gifts, you know, at the end of the year here to celebrate our award-winning news team. And again, from this morning, how Gunnish Sheesh to Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. They started us off with a $1,000 sponsorship challenge. And during those 2 hours, we received over $5,000.
KCAW.org or give us a call, 747-5877. And now we're going to go back to Rob and the future of fishing on Southeast Celebrates News Day.
Thank you, Ann and Fred. I'm Robert Woolsey, Raven Radio News Director. I'm joined in the studio by Harvey Kitka, Linda Benkin, and Heather Bauscher. Heather, I wanted to kick it to you here. You were at the Board of Fish meeting up in Anchorage, as was Harvey. And I heard Harvey go to the table and tell them what he's been telling us today about herring. The board asked him a lot of questions, got him to clarify exactly what he meant about how the distribution of spawning has changed in Sitka Sound. And the herring proposals that the tribe was putting forward didn't pass, I don't believe. What happens, how do you get historical perspective to affect policy change at the board level in Alaska, do you think?
Thanks, Rob, for that question.
Or, easy ones.
Well, maybe.
It's okay.
It's a matter of continuing to try. I mean,
absolutely.
I think I've seen Harvey testify before at previous board cycles, and I think I've seen you testify.
Absolutely. And thank you for saying that and framing it that way too at the end. I mean, we have to be continuing to show up in these forums regardless of what our positions are to continue to push on issues to move things forward. And, you know, I will say, you know, you did introduce me as the chair of the advisory committee. So as I'm speaking on behalf of the advisory committee, there was 12 proposals that were related to herring on the table, and maybe three of those were the ones you just referenced that were primarily organized around. And I would say that there was a variety of different mechanisms, so to speak, in which people were trying to get at aspects of this issue. And the three that you referenced were something that we were split on. And some of those were like deep in the weeds on the herring harvest management plan and strategy. And I think that's what was tricky about those ones, because even though those proposals didn't pass and our committee was split on them, the conversation did raise the acknowledgement that some of these systems and these ways of evaluating could be updated and could be reevaluated and readdressed. And our committee did write a letter to that effect. And I don't know how much publicity there was on that, but we did write a letter in response to those proposals failing, asking for the state to take a look at the data and maybe update how we're utilizing this model. And, you know, all models are tools. I don't want to criticize our department staff. I mean, we are very fortunate, very lucky to have really talented biologists in these positions. But I do think that over the years, with declining funds to the department, maybe we're not supporting our people as well as we'd like to. And I think that we need to have more people showing up at the table, getting involved in these processes, and maybe talking together ahead of some of these meetings to maybe come up with ways that we could approach this or proposals that could be submitted that would maybe be more effective at that level. And I think it's going to take all of us working together. I understand why it's hard or difficult to engage in these processes, but I do want people to know that there is support, and our committee does support folks, and anybody can write a proposal to change anything every 3 years.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Heather. Linda, what do you think about all this? Do you think that the future of fishing depends on bringing a better understanding of historical perspective to the table? I mean, we've been talking about herring going back to the time of reduction. We've seen, you know, the resource nearly eliminated in the Sound. It's come back. It's now still a source of conflict at the board level. Does this kind of dialogue belong at the policy table, really?
Absolutely. I mean, I would say the future of fishing depends on a fair measure of humility, really. I mean, we are seeing so many changes in our ecosystem right now because of climate change. I think we all suffer from, except for someone like Harvey, who has these connections from time immemorial, and his viewpoint informed by those generational knowledge being passed on. We all fall prey to thinking it all started when we first arrived, and that becomes our baseline. And I'm not just talking about herring, but that I think that happens in a lot of arenas. And so if you start managing a commercial fishery and this is the abundance, and, you know, as you said, we're looking at the fourth highest, that seems huge, right? Because it's the fourth highest. But if you have Harvey's perspective and you have seen what herring stocks might have been back before the herring reduction plants, you have a really different baseline. And I think that kind of wisdom is important to draw in increasingly to management of our resources, as is the indigenous stewardship and humility that people brought to their relationship to place long before there was the kind of level of commercial fishing and occupation of this land that we have now. And, you know, in saying that, I'm thinking a lot about what's going on right now in the Bering Sea with crab, with salmon, where we've seen these huge population crashes and what that's meant for the people who depend on those resources, whether they are the subsistence people of the Yukon or the commercial crab fleet that's just lost everything. The system's changing, but there was a long time of people depending on those resources, watching things change with glacial kind of timing of receding and advancing and, you know, but adapting. And now we're, I think, managing as if we're in this little time slot. We're not thinking enough about the past and not thinking enough about the future and what the changes might be bringing.
Yeah, we were sort of discussing, Harvey and I, before we went on the air, that there seems to be, when you're at the Board of Fish, there's charts and graphs going back to 1959, and everything before that somehow isn't relevant to the conversation. But I think you're saying that it is. It's very much... I like the idea of approaching the whole process with a sense of humility and a sense of respecting what the past can teach us about how we've got to this point. So anyway, herring. We're still and forever going to be talking about herring in Sitka Sound.
Let's hope so.
Today we are talking about the future of fishing on Raven Radio. And I'm going to go now back to Fred and Ann to tell you more about why we're here today. And I'll be back with Heather Bauscher, Linda Benkin, and Harvey Kitka. And I think we will shift a little bit to bycatch in Western Alaska, because I know that the Sitka Advisory Committee made some headlines when you took a position on bycatch in the Bering Sea. At least it was one of our most popular stories. But anyway, we will get back to that. I'm going to give it to Ann and Fred now.
Thanks, Rob. This is Southeast Celebrates Newsday. Rob Woolsey, of course, is our news director. We said there were three R's going into this special day to raise funds for local news and public affairs, reliable journalism, responsible journalism, and Rob Woolsey. He leads our team, makes sure that our integrity is strong at the forefront. You rely on KCAW and our local news department to be your eyes and ears on the ground. That's what today's special programming is about, and what I am here to remind you of. Your support makes it possible when you give. Consider a dollar a day. That's $30 a month. $360 for the year. Give now at kcaw.org or call 747-5877. I'm joined in the studio with Fred Olson. He's got a few more details about how to inspire you to give.
Yeah, and when you donate, you become a member of Raven Radio, and you'll support our news department by doing that. And when you become a member today, it's a great time because you'll be entered into a drawing to win 2 round-trip tickets on Alaska Seaplanes to any Alaska Seaplanes destination. And a reminder to our sustaining members who give monthly, you will automatically be entered into that drawing. So thank you. And I encourage you to give a little more. Support our news team, our award-winning news department. You know, I don't know how many times you've had this happen. You or a friend might be listening to Raven Radio and heard some story and you're telling your friends about it. That's what KCAW is all about. The stories, news, and insights that make you stop and think and start your own conversations.
You know, that's what I love about local news. I mean, we all get national news, international news, especially what's happening in Ukraine. We're wonderful partners with National Public Radio and the BBC on that front. But what's happening here, this conversation we're having about the future of fishing, that can only happen when our community supports our reporters and public affairs producers to keep their eyes and ears to the ground on what's happening in Southeast and in Alaska. And that's what you're going to hear next. But first, make your contribution, kcaw.org, or call 747-5877 to make your gift. Back to you, Rob.
Thank you very much, Ann and Fred. I am Robert Woolsey. I'm Raven Radio News Director. I'm joined in the studio by Heather Bauscher, Linda Benkin, and Harvey Kitka. And we're going to shift the conversation to salmon bycatch a little bit. This was a topic of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council at its last meeting, and I just got a press release from Senator Murkowski's office just this afternoon that the United States Senate has unanimously passed an Alaska Salmon Research Task Force Act, which looks like it's headed towards forming a sort of a scientific committee to study the crash of salmon fisheries in the YK Delta and the impact that bycatch might be having on that. But Linda, you were saying that you and Heather have recently been to a council meeting?
We were both up at the December meeting of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, and the chum, well, salmon bycatch generally, but with a real focus on the chum salmon stocks, lack of returns to Yukon, Kuskokwim region, yeah.
And had any progress been made since the last council meeting held here in Sitka?
Not much. Well, there was a meeting of the salmon task force that the council has set up. The governor set up a bycatch task force. The council set up a task force. The governor's bycatch task force, one of their recommendations was to establish a cap on chum salmon bycatch. The task force that the council set up also had not full agreement on that, but that was certainly one of the items that a lot of people in the committee had supported. The council made some commitments to taking steps to reduce chum bycatch, didn't feel like they had the information they needed to decide what an appropriate cap would be and what the right indices or metrics would be for that cap. And there was some a lot of incredible testimony from the people of the region about the crisis they're facing, but also not clear direction yet on what the appropriate management measures would be to return more salmon to the river. So the council's working that direction. They made a commitment to coming up with alternatives, but they didn't identify what those alternatives would be yet at this meeting.
Heather, why did the Sitka AC feel it necessary to take a position on bycatch in Western Alaska?
Well, the bycatch issue for the Sitka AC is pretty easy one, thanks to the history of all the work that Linda and others did to help keep trawling out of Southeast Alaska because of the bycatch concerns and the habitat destruction concerns, honestly. So I'm pretty sure this is something that the local advisory committee has been involved in for a very long time. Even though we're a committee that's supposed to weigh in on stuff specifically to the state, our charter is also to represent the community on issues that impact our fish and wildlife resources. And I think we all should be very concerned about the bycatch issue of all salmon, but especially Chinook salmon, given the pressure Southeast is already under with the habitat loss side on the transboundary mining issue, and then these Chinook interceptions with the bycatch of the trawl fleet and, you know, additional pressures. Like, we're not in the position that they are in out west, but if we can't get a handle on some of these threats to the resource, like, we very much might be in a position like that down the road. And I want to second what Linda said about the time spent at the meeting. The testimony was absolutely incredible. And this is I'm not as familiar with the council process. This was a really big learning opportunity for me. And I'm grateful to people like Linda and like Harvey that have been my mentors in these processes, whether it's the council or the state process or the subsistence process over the years. But it was a strong showing of voices from all of coastal rural Alaska, and especially some strong voices from Southeast, from both the indigenous communities and commercial fishing. So, you know, despite the things that we're up against, it's always really inspiring to witness that and remember that there is a growing movement on these things.
I got to ask, was the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council meeting in Anchorage this last one?
It was.
Because I heard nothing about it. And I got to say that down here, when the council meeting is here in Sitka, I go to the meeting and I usually get tipped to when an important issue like bycatch is coming up. And I let the network know. I say, I'm going to this meeting, and there's going to be a lot of testimony mainly from indigenous representation, people from out west who are coming down here to Sitka to tell the council how they feel about the crash of chum and Chinook in the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers. And the network sort of gets fired up and carries the story. But I think that when the council meeting is in Anchorage, it gets lost a little bit in the media noise of Anchorage. And this is just...
I would agree.
I'm just sort of waving the flag for KCAW that we do thanks to you, Linda, and Harvey, and folks like you, you kind of let us know when the big thing is coming through. And when the Sitka Advisor Committee had the meeting and passed the vote, passed the resolution to send a letter to the council about bycatch in the Bering Sea, I'm like, okay, it's a bunch of people from Sitka who are writing about this thing in Western Alaska. Okay, I'm here, I'll type it up. It would put it on social media, 75,000 people.
Well, that, and one thing I could add is that some of those, the Chinook that are taken as bycatch in the Bering Sea are Pacific Northwest and Southeast Alaska origin. So
fish swim.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, I think we testified in solidarity with the people who depend on salmon from that region, but it's the impacts of bycatch are far reaching.
Yeah. Harvey, I wonder if I could get your perspective on bycatch. So many people from Western Alaska came down to speak at the council meeting on bycatch. Do you at the tribe and the resources committee feel the need to sort of speak as one about issues like this?
It's an ongoing issue with a lot of our native people. And we not only feel sorry for them, because trying to get the North Pacific to understand that this is their livelihood, this is their food through the winter. They're not allowed to catch any. They don't have Walmart. They don't have Costco. They don't have any of these big places. Most of the food comes off the land, and if they lose the food from the rivers that are so important, because they got two different runs of chum up in the interior. You got the early run, which basically they used for food for their dog teams. Then they had their late run, which was for the people. And a different breed of chum salmon altogether. It didn't get brittle like the really chum run. When they smoked it and dried it and cured it, it was a little more tender and stayed a little longer. So, yeah, we definitely had some long talks about these things too.
Yeah, I during that testimony, I put one clip in the news about the dog musher, the resident, the person. Whenever you say musher up here, I think people think Iditarod. This was a person who used dogs as part of his ordinary daily life. He needed to put up 2,000 chum to feed his dog team in order that he could conduct his subsistence lifestyle that he had been living since time immemorial. It's a cultural existence. He had caught two that year.
Wow.
And that clip was played over and over again on network and stations around the state because, as Harvey said, the ability to catch fish basically dropped to zero. And I played a clip from you, Linda, where you testified that there is, you know, a charitable program in place. I believe Alpha has been involved, mm-hmm. where you're trying to send pollock to these distressed communities. Salmon to distressed communities. And it's just sending a box to a distressed community it's no substitute for being able to put your fish wheel in and harvest the fish that you need for your family, right?
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, there's serious food insecurity now in that region. And so providing assistance, and we try to provide whole salmon so people at least have the opportunity to process that fish as a community, as a family. And we were providing salmon this last summer from Bristol Bay, so it was sort of as close to people's traditional foods as we could get, and people were very appreciative of it, but it is no substitute, you're right, for having your own fish swim up the river and the families in the communities be part of that harvest and that processing and smoking, sharing of the fish.
And the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is coming back to Sitka in June.
Yep.
They are. They usually are only here every 3 or 4 years, and they were supposed to be in Kodiak or somewhere else in June, but that community didn't have room for them. So they are coming back here in June, and this issue will be on their agenda. And I'm grateful for that, because you're right. KCAW does a fabulous job of tracking the council meetings when they're happening here and helping the community know how to engage. And really understand what the issues are in front of the council. So it'll be a really important opportunity for people to weigh in.
Yeah, well, it's a learning opportunity for me, too. It started with the AC meeting where I'm like, oh, yeah, Bering Sea bycatch is important to us because these fish are all part of a system that we benefit from greatly here in Sitka. I'm going to kick again to Fred and Ann to tell us a little bit about why we're here. You're listening to Southeast Celebrates Newsday on Raven Radio.
And every contribution that you make today will go directly back into local news and public affairs at KCAW Raven Radio. I'm Ann Alquist, and we have raised over $10,000 towards our $30,000 goal. Consider making a contribution of a dollar a day. That's $30 a month. It will be matched. We've got a challenge on the table to inspire you to support local news across the panhandle. I'm joined in the studio by Fred Olson. He can give you details about how to make your contribution.
Yeah, you can call 907-747-5877 or go online to our website, kcaw.org. And Sea Alaska Corporation has generously challenged you folks by putting up $2,500. So please make your contributions now. You know, the state of Alaska, they had made up 12% of our annual budget, and that is a fact. But that's been cut out of the budget. And we're doing everything we reasonably can to provide service to our members and communities, no matter what. You're an important part of our work. And member-supported radio means you, the listener, are the station's financial base. If you love what you listen to on Raven Radio, join us now.
A reliable, responsible service starts with you. One by one, together, we can make sure that we not only have news, but we have thriving and vital information ecosystem, just like our oceans and fishing. KCAW.org, or give us a call to make your contribution, 747-5877.
Thank you very much, Ann and Fred. I'm Robert Woolsey. I'm Raven Radio News Director. I'm joined in the studio for a conversation about the future of fishing with Harvey Kitka, Linda Benkin, and Heather Bauscher. And while Ann and Fred were urging you to support news on Raven Radio, we were talking about what we can discuss in the time we have left. And of course, there's bottom fishing. You know, Linda is obviously an expert on sablefish and halibut and knows a lot about that. And we thought, well, we could talk about that. We could talk about the lawsuit that's in U.S. District Court in Western Washington from the Wild Fish Conservancy, and maybe we might touch on that. But the thing we sort of reached consensus on was this idea that citizens and citizen observation and cultural and traditional knowledge that Harvey brings to the table in these kinds of policy debates, it's becoming more and more valuable. And it's important that Sitkans be educated in how they can be engaged in the process and what the benefits of being engaged can be and how to do it. And Heather, let's start with what's the name of the app that's out there?
Oh, yeah. Linda had mentioned, but Skipper Science.
Skipper Science, yes. I think we've done a couple stories on it, actually.
Yeah. It's really not that old. It's only this was only the second summer that we were doing it, but it's an app that is on your phone, and it works even when you're not in service, and it's designed for fishermen to collect observations that they're seeing out on the grounds, whether it's changing ocean conditions or anomalies or weird things happening with the fish. But what's been really cool is the original point of that whole program, and it was actually built off of something that started out in the Aleut community of St. Paul with the Indigenous Sentinels Network, because they were trying to collect more local observations and local and traditional knowledge, but gathered in a way that's standardized and then considered data and harder to ignore at the policy level as well. So each year we've done this, all these observations get standardized and become part of this report that we can hand off. And we finally successfully proven to the different agencies that fishermen are capable of collecting this data. So one of the brand new projects, circling back to sablefish, we've been working with a seafood producers cooperative and local longline fishermen in Southeast Alaska to collect stomach samples that they then photograph through the app and upload, and it becomes part of a data set that NOAA is going to be using to do full ecosystem analysis of the Gulf of Alaska, which is also pushing management towards ecosystem-based analysis and giving local fishermen a direct hand in. And we were even paying them for it. And it was kind of funny that they wanted the photos, because when you send the actual samples in, because of the stomach acid, okay, it's like unidentifiable by the time it gets to them.
Tough day for a mailman.
So the photographs through the app are actually a better way to collect the data.
Well, it sounds like we're almost circling back to what Harvey was saying in his early days, salmon trolling. You noticed that the capelin, or the needle, the sand lance, were replaced by herring at a certain point, because herring appeared to be the more robust species during whatever environmental crisis was happening at the time. So studying contents is one, stomach contents is one way of monitoring the sort of the biology of a fishery, right? Have you noticed anything else over the decades, Harvey, that's an obvious change?
Well, we had a lot of things that caused a difference. When back in, I think it was back in 58 or so, the Lituya Bay had that iceberg fall down into the bay and caused a big wave, caused a bit of an earthquake, and it shook up the sediment and all the icy straits and around that area. It caused the salmon to travel a different direction. Most of the sainfish salmon came through Salisbury Sound that year instead of icy straits. Usually we started our seining in icy straits. When we were catching one fish per set on a 250 fathom seine, no way to make money on that, so we start scouting. And we found that instead of coming through icy straits, the fish had came around into Salisbury Sound, and we're traveling through Salisbury and going through the inside that way. So it was a little closer to home for us, and we were able to do quite well. In later times, when the other forage fish that disappeared, before that, well, let's say that when there was enough of the other forage side herring, the salmon seemed like they really liked the smaller fish. It was very plentiful, almost all over the place. And then, whether it was climate change or something happened in the water, and just like one year, just all gone. It was absolutely gone. No idea what happened to it. We start seeing a difference in the size of the fish that came in Sitka Sound, and it's so much different. We had back in the 50s and early 60s, we had We had 50, 60, 70-pound fish that were being caught in such a sound. Now we're lucky to see a 30-pounder. It just kind of, what a world of difference in size and things. And, it would be nice to know what actually happened out there in the ocean. Because when only the herring were left, and this is one of the things I was so concerned about, was that the only thing that man controls is what we take. And if we don't keep track of what's happening in the natural cycle and try to adjust ourselves to it, we'll be hurting ourselves in the long run.
Okay.
So,
do we need to say anything more about the future of fishing? Thank you, Harvey, for that. That's
right on the mark.
Right on the mark.
But I could, if I could add something.
Oh, yes.
I think one of the genesis of the idea of skipper science or contribution, especially the collecting stomachs from sablefish, was during the 2016-18 worm blob years.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the first heads up that the scientists got was from fishermen saying, you know, taking pictures of what turned out to be pyrozoans, which were everywhere in the ocean all of a sudden. And they were in black cod. They were in everything. I mean, they were getting tangled in our lines. They are a critter that doesn't usually live in this cold water. They're come up from down south, and they are not nutritious. Mm-hmm. They look a bit like a jellyfish, only like a worm shape. But everything was eating them because that's what was there, and it was part of what drove the crash in cod stocks and why we see lower body weight and health from the fish that sort of went through this dip during that time when there wasn't a good food source. But the scientists got this first heads up of what turned out to be the worm blob from fishermen saying, what are these things? They're everywhere, and sharing that information with the fishery managers.
And sharing the information in a way that's now sort of given more weight. I think that in the past, I think I heard you saying that a lot of what Harvey is telling us about herring reduction or these other episodes, these other cycles in herring, were sort of dismissed as anecdote, you know, this. And now, through just consistent pressure on the part of the tribal community and concerned fishermen, the AC, it's getting to the point where it really can't be dismissed anymore. And the fact that it's being compiled and sort of used in a way that, you know, can meaningfully affect how policies makers make decisions is really significant and really, I guess, a positive sign for the future. Mm-hmm. That we're not just going to wave this kind of stuff off anymore as, that the year when all the black cod had the worms in their stomach, oh, no big deal, you know, how much have we got this year? How much can we take?
I think scientists have always, maybe limited themselves to what you can count, right? I mean, it's all, if it's not quantifiable and not systematically collected in a very controlled way, they don't want to hear about it because how do I factor that in? And I think with the understanding, particularly in recognition of ecosystem shifts, there's growing awareness of the importance of listening more to what we knew of ecosystems from the past and also what people are seeing in the present that's changing. The scientists and the managers can't keep up with how fast things are changing. That's probably always been true, but it's getting increasingly true and urgent that they start to pay attention to what people are seeing in the here and now, as well as that historic context.
And it's not just fishing. I want to say it's coming across all disciplines. It's been a big deal in ornithology for a long time, mm-hmm. citizen bird, you know, observations of birds.
Yeah.
And just recently we did a story. Jason Schmidt was out fishing.
Oh, yeah.
She was fishing, and she discovered an underwater vent of some kind that's quite large, and it's an observation that Yeah, volcanologists are not going to brush that one off as, you know, the girl who was out fishing. Yeah. So, yeah, it's good. Heather, what are your feelings about the role that, you know, you are chair of a large body of diverse opinion and perspective, and do you feel that this idea of sort of, I don't know, groupthink as we head into critical policy decisions is becoming more and more important?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And, you know, thinking about how I just came back from Anchorage and the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council meetings, like when I showed up there the first day, it's very obvious, like, who's dominating the room in those situations. And it makes me realize how important it is for more people to learn to navigate these systems and be part of these processes. And I think that's what's really great about the local advisory committee and the Southeast Regional Advisory Council on Subsistence, and just that these processes exist and we have the ability to weigh in these ways. And I don't know what we can do to help get more people involved, but I think all of these ways of getting people more connected, whether it's on the policy side or through the research side, I think that was another exciting thing with Skipper Science recently. We just had a wrap-up workshop between the fishermen and the scientists, and to make that direct connection and have them excited to be able to talk to each other and find ways that they could work together to collect data and fill in some of these gaps that we're not getting that have been mentioned was really exciting, because otherwise usually you'd have to work through the policy process to get those things to happen. And like when we were talking about the warm blob and all of that, that's when I used to still do wildlife management at the airport, and we were finding dead MERS all over the place, and I was sending the dead MERS in. And it was really interesting because it wasn't a disease issue. It was a starvation emaciation issue. And they were really relying on a lot of citizens like sending in these birds to figure this problem out. And when I heard them talk about it on Talk of Alaska shortly after, it was interesting because they didn't have very much data on all the forage fish populations to look to, and the only ones they did have data on was herring, because herring's the one that's commercially fished. So they had no idea really what was going on with the capelin or the sand lance or anything at the time.
Yeah, true. Yeah, when you were working for Fish and Wildlife at the airport, I think you were featured in a National Public Radio story originating as KCAW.
Yes.
Who was the reporter who went out with you?
Emily Kwong.
Because
we had a deer carcass issue at the airport, and it was attracting the eagles, and that was another funny conundrum.
Mm-hmm. Wow. anyway, we're just about out of time. Harvey, just in summary, how are you feeling about fishing, the future of fishing?
I feel that the future of fishing, depending on what type of fishing, the troll fishing basically is now chums and king salmon and silvers. For a while, they did touch on a bit of the pink salmon, but not so much anymore. But if we can get a handle on the food source that is out there for these fish. I know on the king salmon, the biologist said that there's enough escapement coming out of the streams to sustain the fishery. But they're getting in the ocean and starving. And they don't know what's causing that. I have a pretty fair idea, but that falls under the forage fish policy, which industry seems to take a big hand in the amount necessary to sustain a fishery, which is a commercial point of view.
Right.
It's not a subsistence or a conservation point of view. So,
thanks, Harvey. Linda Benkin, last thoughts on the future of fishing?
Well, I work with a lot of very conservation-minded fishermen who have always been willing to put the resource first. They are the fishermen who are based here in our communities, have a long history of working here, living here, and they are keen observers of what's happening in the environment. When they see change or when they see a problem, they've stepped up and been willing to take care of that resource. But we need to give them an ever stronger voice. The indigenous knowledge, the commercial fishermen, the small-scale fishermen with the space in the community, the young people coming in who care about making sure they have a future in the fisheries. And those are the voices we need at the table. And if those are the people who are listened to, we'll take good care of our fisheries. But I do think it takes everybody keeping those voices loud and engaged in the process. And it also takes a lot of humility to be tuned in to what's happening and what the impacts of climate change are on our resource.
Yeah, I think that's a big takeaway for today. Thank you for coming in, Linda.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you, Harvey Kitka, for coming in. And thank you, Heather Bauscher, for coming in and helping us talk about the future of fishing and celebrating news on KCAW. I'm Robert Woolsey, Raven Radio News Director. I'm going to pass it back to Fred and Ann one last time before we go to headlines from National Public Radio.
Thanks, Rob. It's Southeast Celebrates News Day, and we've got someone to thank. I'm here in the studio with Fred Olson.
Yeah, thank you to Sam and Kristen Scotchmer from Sitka. Thanks for supporting Raven Radio. That'll go towards the trying to match Sea Alaska Corporation's challenge of $2,500. And Raven Radio's been on the air for 40 years, and hopefully it'll keep us on the air for 40 more years.
KCAW.org, or give us a call, 747-5877. Consider giving $1 a day, that's $30 a month, and support Raven News when you contribute. KCAW.org, or call 747-5877.